Okay, the tabernacle. Here we are again. It's been a little while since the last message I gave on the tabernacle. So I'd like to do a bit of a recap and discuss again the purpose of the tabernacle and go through briefly some of the events leading up to the building of the tabernacle, and then we'll continue on from there. So the tabernacle. I had asked this question the last time, and I think I'll ask it again. What is the tabernacle? Anybody have any answers? What is the tabernacle? Yes. It was the dwelling place of God. God came to dwell with man. So we talked about the meaning of the word tabernacle. In Hebrew, they refer to it as the Mishkan. It's a dwelling or a tent, a place of meeting. So why study the tabernacle? Does anybody have any ideas on that? You know, this is Old Testament, right? Why do we need to study this? This doesn't apply to us. Is that right? No. No, it does apply to us. Sorry, say that again. The shadow of the real thing. Yes, there is a tabernacle in heaven. So it's a pattern or a model of the real thing in heaven. Why else would it be good for us to study the tabernacle? Jesse, what do you think? To understand God and his ways better. That's a good answer. So, one of the reasons I believe that it's good to study the tabernacle and the Old Testament in general is that it's foundational to understanding the New Testament. So what we come to understand about the tabernacle, and when you study deep into the tabernacle, you catch a better understanding of what Jesus came to do and why he came. And you can, in the New Testament, I mean, look at the New Testament. It's filled with references to the Old Testament. So this is the foundation. We look at the first five books and then, you know, the other, the minor prophets and the major prophets. This is the foundation that God lays for his people leading into the new covenant. So it's important to study the tabernacle. We talked about that. It's very important to study the tabernacle. And if you haven't studied it, I would encourage you to study it on your own. What I'm going to share today isn't the fullness or the depth of it. In fact, there's many typologies that are found between the tabernacle and Christ, which I'm not going to mention those today. Today, the idea is to get a glimpse and an understanding of what the tabernacle is and its construction. I would like to expand upon that, so we know how it was built, how God ordered everything and the way it was to be assembled and taken up again and then reassembled whenever they would move from place to place in the wilderness. So I believe it's a fundamental thing to know the Old Testament to understanding the New Testament. And it reveals who God is. God is a God of beauty. He's a God of order. He's a God of mercy, holiness, love, fellowship. Those are just a few things to describe God. And we can see all of that described in the tabernacle. And the last thing that I would like to mention about why study the tabernacle is that it will enrich your life as a believer when you fully understand the foundation God laid and then what Jesus came to do. the transition from the old covenant to the new. So this is a continuation here, why the tabernacle? Here's the artist's depiction that I had from last time of the tabernacle. We have the Genesis relationship is broken. And then I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these. Genesis relationship is broken. We have something happened. And what was that? Man fell. He rebelled against God. We have the fall of man, and he has no way of getting back on his own to a right relationship with God. And so God has to make a way. He has to provide a way. Man loses his fellowship, eternal life, and perfection. God has a desire. We read about that. God has a plan. And his plan is to redeem people back to himself. And the tabernacle is one of the steps in the way that he did that. The tabernacle was a place where God could come and dwell among his people, even though they were sinful and broken. So we talked about what to repair. I mentioned God's nature. God's nature, he is holy and righteous, but he is also loving and merciful. But if he has a desire to dwell with his people, he also has to set rules, and he has to set guidelines, and there has to be things in place that allow people to meet with him because God is holy. So we are made in his image, made in God's likeness. Our bodies, we have a body, a soul, and a spirit. It's like God is a triune God. And that spirit is a part of us that connects with God and will live in for eternity and allows us to have fellowship with him. And that spirit, that part of us, is the part that died. And God has to quicken us together to be with him. Ephesians talks about that. Ephesians 2:1 says, "And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins." So we worship in spirit and in truth. So I wrote a quote here at the bottom. This is my quote. "The plan of restoration, God designed it, he initiated it, and he upholds it. Our portion is to trust and obey." So God begins to work with his people, and he sets up the outline of how they were to build the ark and what it was to be used for and how they were to do the sacrifices. And that would be the guideline and the outline to how they were to meet with him. And he's the one that planned it, and he's the one that redeems us. But we have our part to do in obedience and trusting him. So we see the children of Israel, they're in bondage in Egypt. First thing that happens, Joseph dies. They have a new king that does not remember Joseph. They end up in bitter servitude. And there's the order to kill the Hebrew sons. Then we have a leader that's born. Moses, his life begins. He flees to Midian. Moses meets with God in the burning bush. He has heard the cry of his people. God has heard the cry of his people. He tells Moses, "I've heard their cry." And he sets up Moses to lead, calls Moses to lead the Israelites. And his promise is, "I will be with thee." So we talked about that last time. We know that we can learn from this that whatever God calls us to, we know that he will always be with us when we obey his call. Moses returns to Egypt, and then we have the great deliverance. So God sends the plagues. And he has the promise that with a strong hand, Pharaoh will let them go. Then we have the first Passover, a very significant time in the Israelite history. The Israelites are set free. God fights for them at the Red Sea, so now they're fleeing. They're leaving Egypt. God receives praise in chapter 16 of Exodus here. And then comes the complaining. So, these people, the Israelites, are going to, we'll see if we get to messages in the future, in Numbers and Leviticus, we see problems arise and things don't go perfectly like they should, because we're dealing with broken and sinful man here. So the complaining begins. God provides the manna and the quail. So God provides for their daily needs. Jethro offers a burnt offering. And then we're coming into the wilderness of Sinai. So they begin to wander in the wilderness as God leads them. And you remember, we talked about the tabernacle. There was a pillar of fire by night and a cloud by day that would lead them. So when the pillar of fire stayed by night and the cloud stayed by day, they did not get up and travel. They camped there. But when the cloud or the pillar would move, then they would pack everything up and follow. And that's how God led them in the wilderness, 40 years. God meets the people and speaks the Ten Commandments. God gives covenant laws, and then he calls Moses up into the mount. And here is the beginning of the tabernacle instructions in Exodus 25. So I would invite you all to turn in your Bibles to Exodus chapter 25. We're going to do a verse-by-verse study. Starting in this chapter. Okay. Exodus 25. I'm going to read starting in verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering. Of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering. Now, we spoke about this on the last message some. We talked about how God gives commandment here to Moses, and he's telling Moses, speak to the people. And Moses is to tell the people that they are to bring an offering. But what kind of offering? Can anyone tell me what kind of offering this was? Any ideas? Well, in my Bible here, it says a heave offering, or an offering that you would lift up. So it was a, here it is, Lord, this is for you. This is an offering, and it was meant to be willing. It had to be willing. That was the key right here. God wanted the Israelites to be willing. He wanted to be able to give willingly. So this had to be a willing offering. With his heart, ye shall take my offering. So I like this verse in the sense that God, even in the Old Testament, is concerned with the heart. He's concerned with the heart. So it had to be a willing offering with the heart. So now Moses tells them this, and then this is what the offering is to be. Starting in verse 3, "This is the offering which ye shall take of them, gold and silver and brass and blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair and ram skins dyed red and badger skins and shittim wood, oil for the light, spices for anointing oil, and for sweet incense, onyx stones, and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate." So verses 3 through 7 is an overview of all the materials needed to build the tabernacle. We have gold. Gold is a precious metal, and it's set apart from other metals in the sense that it doesn't tarnish like silver, it doesn't rust like steel, it stays pure. So gold is a symbol here of God's holiness and perfection. And we'll see that most of the gold is used in the inner sanctuary, the holiest of holies, and the holy place. Silver. We have brass. Brass was used on those items that needed more structural stability, such as the brazen altar. When you heat brass with fire, it doesn't melt like silver or gold would. It holds its shape and its structure. We have blue, purple, and scarlet. This was often colors used in the linens, the fine twine linen that it talks about. The fine linen. We have goat's hair. Here I have some notes on they would often use a Syrian goat would have a soft inner hair and a coarse outer hair. So that was the hair that was used to make one of the coverings. And we'll learn about the coverings. Now, the offering continued here. We have ram skins dyed red. Now, that's significant. Keep in mind, I'm not going to share a whole lot about it now, but I'm hoping in the future I'll be able to do the typology here. But there is so much significance in paralleling these items and the tabernacle, the materials used in God's plan of salvation. So we have the ram skins dyed red. We have badger skins. Now these are the coverings that were used for over the tabernacle, the tent, if you will. Shittim wood, that was often used for structural purposes and also various tools and implements. Oil for the light. We'll learn about a candlestick. The oil was used to keep the candles burning. Spices for anointing oil. We have onyx stones. And if you look here, this photo, you'll see an onyx stone, a representation of an onyx stone and the names of the tribes of Israel. So we will also learn God commanded that the high priest would wear the ephod, and on his shoulders he had an onyx stone on each shoulder, and they had engraved into the stones were the names of the tribes of Israel. Shittim wood. We talked about shittim wood here. This was used often for the tabernacle structure and the furniture. It's also known as acacia. Acacia nilotica is the one thought to be the exact type of tree that was used. It's one of the species of acacia tree. And it's found in valleys throughout the Sinai wilderness, valleys near the Dead Sea, etc. So we have a depiction of what a shittim wood tree or an acacia tree might look like. So I think I shared a little bit about this. They are, so God knows what he's doing. Let's just put it that way. God knows exactly what he's doing when he commands people to build with certain materials. What we can learn from the acacia, well, obviously it was a tree that they could find where they were located. So it does match up with the topography of where they were located. And then they are a hardwood, insect resistant and also rot resistant. So this is something that when they built with this wood, it was meant to last. It was sturdy, it was durable, and it was something that they could count on for many years. When God asks us to do something, he will always provide us or allow us to use the resources that he gives us to follow out with that. He's not going to ask us to do something and then not provide what we need. This tree is also great for furniture. And it's harder than hickory and white oak, I had mentioned last time. Here's an example of a table. This would be a table made of acacia. It also has great beauty. That was the one thing I hadn't mentioned that really stood out to me, is the fact that God doesn't just tell us to build things or do things that are going to look ugly. He had beauty in mind as well in creating his tabernacle. Okay. And let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. Exodus 25:8. Let's take a look at that. Let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. Here is a key verse for the tabernacle. It reveals God's plan in that he wants to dwell with his people. So the pattern, let's look at verse 9. So God says, let me make you a sanctuary. You know, I want to dwell among you according to all that I show thee after the pattern of the tabernacle. And the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it. The pattern. So after the pattern of the tabernacle. Give me some thoughts on the pattern. What's a pattern? If someone were to tell you, oh, I have a pattern for that. How about you ladies that like to sew? What's a pattern? A replica? Yes, Jerry. Yeah, there's an outline and an exact way of doing something. You have to follow a certain set of steps or rules. So we have the pattern of the tabernacle. Well, let's take a look. Hebrews 8:5. You may turn there with me if you wish. I can find. Hebrews 8:5. Okay. Let's take a look at this. So this is a shadow of heavenly things. Hebrews 8:5. Let's start in verse 4. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law, who serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle. For see, saith he, that thou make all things according to the pattern showed to thee on the mount. So here we see that God commanded Moses to make the tabernacle according to the pattern that he set. In verse 5, we see a shadow of heavenly things. There's a tabernacle in heaven, like unto, or should say, this tabernacle is made like unto the one in heaven. I have another passage to back that up. Let's look at Revelation 11, 19. So this is after the two prophets are raised from the dead, and a seventh angel comes and sounds, and we hear voices of praise and worship. We look at starting in verse 18, and the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints, and them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldst destroy them which destroy the earth. And the temple of God was opened in heaven. So this is the temple in heaven. And there was seen in his temple, the ark of his testament. And there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. The ark of his testament would be a reference to the tabernacle or the ark of the covenant. And then one last one that I want to point out here is Revelation 15. Verse 5. It says, and after that I looked, and behold, the temple of the tabernacle of the testimony in heaven was opened. So here we see another evidence of the tabernacle in heaven. So Moses was to make a copy as God would show it to him, or a pattern of the tabernacle in heaven. Now we come to a few measurements that I'd like to introduce to us. Let's talk about these. These will help us understand sizes for the furniture and some of the buildings and the structure itself. We have the cubit. Is anybody familiar with the cubit? Yeah. Can somebody tell me approximately how long that is, or give me an example of the length? Approximately 18 inches. Yeah, that's correct. So how did they measure the cubit in those days? Yeah, so from here to here. Now that varies from person to person because of different, you know, you have each person's arm is a different, you know, we're not all alike, but it's approximately 18 inches. That's the cubit. Now we have the span. Can anybody tell me about the span? Maybe a little lesser known. Your hand. Yeah, so it'd be from your pinky to your thumb here. It's about roughly nine inches. Now we have the hand breadth. Anybody can tell me what the hand breadth is? Yes, Seth. Yeah. So it'd be the width of your, so if you hold your hand like this, be from here to here. So it's like your palm or up here across your four fingers, the hand breadth. And that approximately is 3 to 4 inches. So one cubit, so if we want to do equal measurements here, there's 6 hand breadths in one cubit. There's 2 spans in 1 cubit. And I have that here. So now, the Ark of the Covenant. This is an artist's depiction of what the Ark may have looked like. And we see it's gold, and it looks like 2 cherubim on the lid there. Now, I will say that this is an artist's depiction, so don't take this as exactly how it was. Now, let's take a look back in Exodus chapter 25. And we're going to look at verse 10, starting in verse 10. This is where the ark, God talks about the ark. And they shall make an ark of shittim wood. Aha. So the ark, its structure is shittim wood. So keep that in mind. Make an ark of shittim wood. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1.5 cubits the breadth thereof, and 1.5 cubits the height thereof. And if you look up on the slide, you can see that's approximately 45 by 27 by 27. To give you an idea of the size of this ark. And then it says, and thou shalt overlay it with pure gold. Within and without shalt thou overlay it, and shall make upon it a crown of gold round about. So it had gold overlay on the outside, on the inside, and there was a golden crown around the top. And thou shalt cast 4 rings of gold for it. And put them in the 4 corners thereof. And 2 rings shall be in the one side of it, and 2 rings in the other side of it. So you can see the rings in that photo there. And the rings were used for the staves. And if we look at verse 13, it says, and thou shalt make staves of shittim wood and overlay them with gold. Looks to me like this artist did not overlay those with gold. But those were also to be overlaid with gold. And then it says, and thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the sides of the ark, that the ark may be borne with them. So this was a way of transporting and carrying the ark. They were long, the staves were the long wooden rods that they would use to lift the ark and carry it. They were not allowed to touch it. In fact, if we read, if any of you know the Old Testament well enough, you read, there was a man that died from touching the ark to steady it when it was teetering. So the staves were a mechanism of transport. Now, let's see. Okay, a look within the ark. So what did the ark contain? Can someone tell me what the ark contained? The Ten Commandments. Yes, so God's law that God wrote. He wrote on the tablets of stone. That's right. Yep. So those were placed within the ark. What else was in the ark? Aaron's rod that budded. Thanks, Seth. Aaron's rod that budded. What's the significance of that? So God was telling people, this is who I've set in place to lead. This is who I've chosen. You need to listen to them. So he chose Aaron. Aaron's rod was the one that budded. So it shows that God sets up the authority and they needed to listen. Now the Ten Commandments shows of God's, reveals, God reveals how we are to love him and others. So Aaron's rod was God's appointed leadership. And then last, what's the third item that was placed within the tabernacle or the ark? Manna. Yeah, what's the significance of the manna? God's provision. Yes, God's provision for his people. going to take a look here at Hebrews 9. As you notice, I'm jumping to Hebrews a few times here. Hebrews is a great book if you're looking to see the correlation between the tabernacle from the Old to the New Testament. Hebrews explains it well, talking about sacrifices and ordinances and how they relate to the new covenant. So Hebrews 9, 3 and 4 says, "And after the second veil, the tabernacle which is called the holiest of all, which had the golden censer and the ark of the covenant overlaid round about with gold, wherein was the golden pot that had manna, and Aaron's rod that budded, and the tables of the covenant." So this is the passage here is where we find the three items that are within. It's the tablets, Aaron's rod, and the manna. Now, let's go to the mercy seat. Now, you notice I'm putting different photos up here just because I'd like you to see that there are different variations in how people depict these. So we don't actually know exactly what it would have looked like, but we are given God has laid out in his word for the men to understand on how to build it. So we have the mercy seat. The mercy seat. Now, this is one of the most significant pieces of the tabernacle. Can anybody tell me what made it significant for the people of Israel, not for us today, but what made it significant for the people of Israel? Yes. Okay, it's where the high priest went in and sprinkled the blood. What else? We're talking about God dwelling with man, right? That's where God's presence was. So in between the two cherubim is right where God's presence would come and reside among the people. That's where it would be. And once a year, we know that the high priest would go in there for the atonement, the Day of Atonement, to atone for the people's sins. But this is where holiness is. This is the holiness of God. So the mercy seat, let's read about it. Let's go back to Exodus 25. And starting in verse 17. "And thou shalt make a mercy seat of pure gold. 2 cubits and a half shall be the length thereof, and 1 cubit and a half the breadth thereof." So we see it's the same length and the same width as the ark itself, which would make sense if it's a lid to sit on top of the ark. "And thou shalt make 2 cherubims of gold, of beaten work, shalt thou make them in the 2 ends of the mercy seat." So one thing I want you to notice here, God doesn't mention shittim wood and the lid being overlaid. He doesn't mention that the lid is made, the mercy seat is made of shittim wood overlaid with gold. He says it's made with pure gold. Pure gold. Now we are given the length and the width. We are not given the height. The Bible does not mention the thickness. "And thou shalt make 2 cherubims of gold of beaten work." I don't know about you, but I don't know anyone personally or can think of anyone today that would be able to beat out these cherubims and the lid all in one solid piece. That took immense skill. And I'll talk about that a little bit further. I'll talk about that more a little bit later. So it's 2.5 cubits by 1.5 cubits. There's 2 cherubim. And I want you to notice, let's take a look in verse 19. and make one cherub on the one end, and the other cherub on the other end. Even of the mercy seat shall ye make the cherubims on the two ends thereof." So there was to be a cherub on each end of the lid. And in verse 20 says, "And the cherubims shall stretch forth their wings on high, covering the mercy seat with their wings, and their faces shall look one to another. Toward the mercy seat shall the faces of the cherubims be." So we know certain things here about how it was constructed. One, it was made of pure gold. Two, the cherubim were beaten out, one on each end, and they were facing each other, and their wings were covering the mercy seat. Verse 21 says, "And thou shalt put the mercy seat above upon the ark, and in the ark thou shalt put the testimony that I shall give thee. And there will I meet with thee, and I will commune with thee from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubims which are upon the ark of the testimony, of all things which I will give thee in the commandment unto the children of Israel." This is where God's presence would come. This is where God's presence came to meet with the people. This is where he communed with his people. Communion. Okay, next piece of furniture, the table. Let's read about the table. So verse 23, "Thou shalt also make a table of shittim wood." Here we go again, shittim wood. So here we have another piece made with shittim wood. "Two cubits shall be the length thereof, and a cubit the breadth thereof, and a cubit and a half the height thereof. And thou shalt overlay it with pure gold." So this, too, was overlaid with pure gold. "And make thereto a crown of gold round about." So this also had a crown of gold around the top. "And thou shalt make unto it a border of an handbreadth round about. And thou shalt make a golden crown to the border thereof, round about. And thou shalt make for it four rings of gold, and put the rings in the four corners that are on the 4 feet thereof." So, you can see in this artist's depiction, we have something similar to the ark. There are rings and staves, both the staves overlaid with gold and the rings made of gold. Now, this was also for transport. Keep in mind, everything in the tabernacle, because God would lead them around in the wilderness, everything in the tabernacle had to be portable. It had to be movable. It was not a permanent structure. It was meant to be taken down and re-erected every time they moved. So we have the staves again. Now, verse 27, "Over against the border shall the rings be for places of the staves to bear the table. And thou shalt make the staves of shittim wood, and overlay them with gold, that the table may be borne with them. And thou shalt make the dishes thereof." So there were dishes that were put on the table. "Dishes and spoons and covers and bowls thereof to cover withal, of pure gold shalt thou make them." And then verse 30, thou shalt set upon the table showbread before me alway." So there were dishes. We can see here there's plates, and then there's a dish in the middle there that would have incense on it. And they had the showbread on the table as well. And all of this was to present to the people of Israel that God had made an everlasting covenant with them. The showbread. Let's talk about the showbread a little bit. Leviticus 24, verses 5 through 9. And thou shalt take fine flour and bake 12 cakes thereof. 2/10 deals shall be in one cake, and thou shalt set them in two rows, 6 on a row, upon the pure table before the Lord. And thou shalt put pure frankincense upon each row, that it may be on the bread for a memorial, even an offering made by fire unto the Lord. So there were 2 rows of 6 loaves, representing the 12 tribes of Israel. It was renewed every Sabbath. So every Sabbath he set it in order before the Lord continually, being taken from the children of Israel by an everlasting covenant. And it shall be Aaron's and his sons, and they shall eat it in the holy place, for it is most holy unto him of the offerings of the Lord made by fire by a perpetual statute. So it was to be a reminder of God's everlasting covenant. When we think of tables and food, we often think of fellowship, right? When you gather around the table, think of fellowship. So this was a way of when Aaron and his sons would gather together and they would eat of this bread. Just think, I'll give a little bit of a typology here, but the high priest would commune with the other priests and they would eat. This would be the food for the priests. So today, you know, Jesus is our high priest, and we are the priests, and we commune with him. So this is a picture of that. Okay. Next in is the candlestick. So let's go back to Exodus 25 again, starting in verse 31. And thou shalt make a candlestick of pure gold. Okay, so we have another article here. Another piece that is made completely of gold, pure gold. Of beaten work shall the candlestick be made. So this was another piece, just like the lid or the mercy seat. This was a beaten work. It was all pounded out and shaped to the way it needed to be. Very intricate piece. His shaft and his branches, his bowls, his knops, and his flowers shall be of the same. Let's take a look at that. You see on the left there is a branch. In the middle is the shaft. The shaft is the going up the center, and then the branches come off to the side. And then we have the bowl at the base of each flower, if you will. We have the bowl shaped like an almond, then the knop or a bud, and then the flower. Now we'll read on here. And 6 branches shall come out of the sides of it, 3 branches of the candlestick out of one side, and 3 branches of the candlestick out of the other side. 3 bowls made like unto almonds, with a knop and a flower in one branch, and 3 bowls made like unto almonds in the other branch, with a knop and a flower. So in the 6 branches that came out of the candlestick. So there were 6 branches and 1 main stem, which would be the shaft. So there were 7 candles total. And in the candlestick shall be 4 bowls made like unto almonds with their knops and their flowers. And there shall be a knop under two branches of the same, and a knop under two branches of the same, and a knop under two branches of the same, according to the six branches that proceed out of the candlestick. Their knops and their branches shall be of the same, and it shall be one beaten work of pure gold. I'm not going to touch on it now, but the knops, the flowers or the buds, and the bowls, they all have significance. So the candlestick was situated on the northern side inside the tent. It was situated on the north side. I'll mention this. The table was situated on the south side. The gate, or the opening of the tabernacle, would face eastward. So this is where, this was in the holy place. Not the Holy of Holies where the Ark of the Covenant was, but it was in the holy place. So again, amazing craftsmanship. One beaten work of pure gold. Start in verse 7 here, 37. And thou shalt make the seven lamps thereof, and they shall light the lamps thereof, that they may give light over against it. And the tongs thereof and the snuff dishes thereof shall be of pure gold. Of a talent of pure gold shall he make it with all these vessels. And look that thou make them after their pattern, which was showed thee in the mount. Okay. A talent of pure gold. Can anyone tell me how much a talent of pure gold would weigh in pounds? 58. Nah, not quite. Anyone know? Anyone want to take a guess? It's a little more, it's more than 58. I'll put it that way. One talent. A little less than 100. I'll give you, it's approximately 70 pounds, 70, 75, somewhere around there. So this candlestick and its accessories, if you will, the tongs and the snuff dishes, weighed approximately 70 pounds of pure gold. And the candlestick was beaten out of one piece. One piece, 70 pounds. I didn't do the conversion, but maybe you can go home and do the math. For those of you that like to do math, to figure out how much that would cost today. 70 to 75 pounds of gold, how much that would be worth. It's showing God's holiness, and it's showing, you know, he's priceless, he's perfect, he's pure. So we have six branches and seven lamps in total. The Jewish people today, this would be considered the menorah, what they would use as the menorah. Same idea, same pattern. Something else I wanted to point out, we'll touch on this later, but inside the tabernacle, the walls were lined with gold. And the candlestick was in there. There were no windows, so it would be completely dark inside there, except for the light of this candle in the holy place. So the holy place was lit by this candle. And can you imagine, just imagine yourself in there, all the walls are pure gold, the candle is pure gold, the table next to your right is pure gold, and you've got seven lamps flickering in there, all shining off the gold walls. It would have been beautiful. It really would have been beautiful. So we have beaten gold, six branches, the knops, the flowers, and the bowls, one talent, and a light in the dark. Craftsmanship. This is what I wanted to touch on. We talked about the mercy seat and the candlestick being of one beaten work. Let's turn to Exodus 31, verses 1 to 7. I'd like to point this out. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, See, I have called by name Bezaleel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and I have filled him with the Spirit of God. So God filled this man with his Spirit in wisdom and in understanding and in knowledge and in all manner of workmanship. So God filled this man with wisdom, understanding, knowledge, and all manner of workmanship to devise cunning works, to work in gold and in silver and in brass and in cutting of stones to set them and in carving of timber to work in all manner of workmanship. So here in Exodus 31, we see that God himself gave these men the ability to make these items just the way that he wanted them to. So we see that God gives the knowledge and the wisdom. All wisdom comes from God. All true wisdom comes from God. So those of you that have a skill, talk about the parable of the talents. Those of you that have a skill, give God the glory. You didn't come up with it on your own. God gives us minds. He gives us sound minds. We can think. He gives us talents. Each of us have different abilities. Use them for his glory. These men, God gave them the skill and the talent they needed, and they used it for his glory. They built what God wanted them to build. So cunning work is skillful work. Okay, now we're going to jump to the next item. Let's go back to Exodus 25. Well, actually, we're in 26 now. Chapter 26 of Exodus. The curtains and the coverings. Let's take a look at this depiction here. We have linen, would be the first covering. Then we have goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, and then on the very outermost cover, we have what's called, the Bible refers to it as badger's skin. So these coverings were to protect the precious interior items, such as the candlestick and the table and the mercy seat and the ark. And in the backside there would be the holiest of holies, would be where the ark was located and God's presence was. In this front side here, where you see the entrance or the door, you have the place where the candlestick and the table would have been. So let's take a look here. Chapter 26. Moreover, thou shalt make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen. Linen curtains. Here we go. 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and blue, and purple, and scarlet, with cherubims of cunning work shalt thou make them. The length of one curtain shall be 8 and 20 cubits, and the breadth of one curtain 4 cubits, and every one of the curtains shall have one measure. I don't have a whiteboard here to write on, but if you could imagine with me that this bookmarker here, it's long like the curtain would have been. It would have been 28 cubits long and 4 cubits wide, and they would have taken 5 of these and coupled them together. Then they would have taken these and another 5 and coupled those together, and so then you have 5 and 5, and they would have brought those 5 sets of 5 together with loops. And we'll read about that here. It says, the 5 curtains shall be coupled together, verse 3, one to another, and other 5 curtains shall be coupled one to another. And thou shalt make loops of blue upon the edge of the one curtain from the selvage in the coupling, and likewise shalt thou make in the uttermost edge of the other curtain in the coupling of the second. 50 loops shalt thou make in one curtain, and 50 loops shalt thou make in the edge of the curtain that is in the coupling of the second, that the loops may take hold one of another. So we have 10 pieces or 10 curtains, each 28 by 4 cubits. Five of them put together over here, five of them put together over here, and then brought together as one piece, which would then go over as the first layer over the tent. So, when it was laid over the tent, it would cover the roof, the north side, which would be the side facing us here, the south side, which would be the other long side, and it would cover the west side. Now, the east side was open. The east side was open. So 10 curtains, the golden clasps, and the blue loops, that's what they used to attach them to each other. By 40 cubits was the size of the overall curtain when it was all put together. And this was made of fine twine linen of blue, purple, and scarlet. Okay, the next covering was the goat's hair covering. So this one was a little different. First of all, it was made of goat's hair and not fine twine linen, but it also was slightly different in size. So we look at starting in verse 7, and thou shalt make curtains of goat's hair to be a covering upon the tabernacle. 11 curtains shalt thou make. So instead of 10, it's now 11 curtains. The length of one curtain shall be 30 cubits. So instead of 28, it's 30. And the breadth of one curtain, 4 cubits. So it's still the same width. So if you imagine this, instead of 28, it's now 30. But the width is still 4. And the 11 curtains shall be all of one measure. And thou shalt couple 5 curtains by themselves and 6 curtains by themselves. So 5 of them coupled together, 6 of them coupled together, and then brought together again to join as one piece. And thou shalt make 50 loops on the edge of the one curtain that is outermost in the coupling, and 50 loops in the edge of the curtain which coupleth the second. And thou shalt make 50 tatches of brass. So instead of silver, these are brass, and put the tatches into the loops and couple the tent together, that it may be one. And the remnant that remaineth of the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that remaineth, shall hang over the back side of the tabernacle. So here we see that since it's slightly larger, it's 30 cubits by 4 cubits, we have it overhangs a little bit further than the linen curtain. And so on the sides and the back, it hangs an extra half cubit. And on the front, it's doubled over. So that 11th curtain gets doubled on the front, peeled back. So we end up with 30 by 42 cubits with the sixth doubled. I would encourage you, I know it's a little hard for me to explain it. It might be better if I could draw it, but look into it yourself if you want to know a little bit more about how it was laid over and the sizes and how everything was put together. Okay, now we have the ram skins covering. So the ram skins were dyed red. Now, this photo that I have here would be the first covering. That's a depiction of the first covering. You see we have white, red, and blue, and scarlet, and how they're attached together. Now, they chose to do solid colors. Some People say fine twined linen was what all the colors were twined together. But this here is a depiction of what it may have looked like. This is Timnah Park Tabernacle. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it or know of it, but this is a tabernacle replica built today. For those that want to see it and go and visit it, there's a replica in Israel north of Eilat and the Red Sea, somewhere in that area. You can go and see this. This is a real replica or depiction of the tabernacle as found in Exodus. So we have the ram skins. They were dyed red. It's interesting to note that in Exodus 26:14, if we look there, thou shalt make a covering. Okay, I'm confusing myself. Let's start over. Exodus 26:14 tells of the covering. It says, and thou shalt make a covering for the tents of ram skins dyed red, and a covering above of badger skins. So the first part of the verse there talks about the ram skins dyed red. In Exodus here, that's 26, that's all we have mentioned of it. Now, I will say this, that the rams, later on you can learn that the rams were used to consecrate the priests to office. Just a note, a side note there. Was used for consecration. And there were sacrifices involved. Lots of bloodshed, which has significance there. Now we go to the badger skins covering. Now I placed different photos up here just so you can catch a glimpse of the interior of the tabernacle as well. You can see on the left, this is the front, the east entrance here on the left. Going in on the north side to your right would be the table of showbread. On the left side to your south is the candlestick. And straight ahead would be the altar of incense. And then behind that, which would be the veil, behind the veil would be the holiest of holies, which is where God's presence resided. So now back to the badger skins covering. Let's take a look at what that was. So the badger skin covering was the outermost covering. It was the last layer of all the coverings. It was also meant to offer protection. It was to be made of a durable material, something that would shed water, something that would protect the interior contents of this tabernacle. Something to protect all of that exquisite beauty. Now, just imagine you're in the desert. This covering would preserve the interior from blowing wind, occasional rain, scorching sun, whatever else came along. This would be the protection that would keep everything safe on the interior. Now, one reason why we can conclude that it's a tough and durable material is in Ezekiel 16, verse 10, it mentions that this material was used for footwear. So anything, if we consider footwear, obviously it has to be durable. So anything used as footwear would have to be durable. Something else to note, there is some speculation as to whether or not it was an actual badger that the skin was used. Some would believe that it's more of like some other type of creature, some seal or something like that, where it had more of a... it would shed water. But here we do read, it says badger's skin here in the scriptures. So the tabernacle structure. Now we're going to get to the meat of this tent. Those of you in here that know how to frame or you do framing, here's where the, the framing skills come in for those that are working on the tabernacle. So Exodus 26, verse 16. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board. Now we're talking about boards here. So these boards were made of acacia wood. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board, and a cubit and a half shall be the breadth of one board. How many of you here are woodworkers? Did you ever come across too many boards that are a cubit and a half wide? Can you do the math? That's over 2 foot wide for one board. You're talking 27 inches? 27-inch board? That's pretty wide. 10 foot long, a little over 2 foot wide. So then, 10 cubits shall be the length. Yep, and verse 17. 2 tenons shall there be in one board, set in order one against another. Thus shalt thou make for all the boards of the tabernacle. How many of you are familiar with mortise and tenon? Mortise and tenon, you have something that fits into a hole. So your mortise and then your tenon, they fit together like a glove. Thou shalt make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards on the south side southward, and thou shalt make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for his 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for his 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle on the north side, there shall be 20 boards. And there are 40 sockets of silver. 2 sockets under one board and 2 sockets under another board. And for the sides of the tabernacle westward, thou shalt make 6 boards. And 2 boards shalt thou make for the corners of the tabernacle and the 2 sides. And they shall be coupled together beneath, and they shall be coupled together above the head of it unto 1 ring. Thus shall it be for them both. They shall be for the 2 corners. And they shall be 8 boards and their sockets of silver, 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board and 2 sockets under another board. And thou shalt make bars of shittim wood, 5 for the boards of the one side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards of the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards of the side of the tabernacle for the 2 sides westward. And the middle bar in the midst of the board shall reach from end to end. I'll stop there, and we'll talk about what I just read. So here, this is the overall tabernacle structure. You have the boards, your sockets, your bars, and the veil. It's silver sockets and 4 pillars. The door, 5 pillars, chapters, and fillets of gold, and sockets of brass. Let's take a look at what those boards may have looked like. So here you see boards. Now they were 10 foot long. And they would rise, they would lift them up, they would be standing up, and they would be together. And they would put 20 of them to make up one side of the north, and 20 of them to make up one side of the south. So that was the long way of the tabernacle. Now, on the bottom here, you can see the silver sockets. The tenons were in the bottoms of the boards, and then talks about bars. Well, bars were slid through to lock everything together. So then we also know that these boards were all overlaid with gold. So everything that you saw on the inside of the tabernacle, all the walls were gold. There were 48 boards in all. So there were 20 boards on the north side, 20 boards on the south side, 6 boards on the west side, and 2 boards for the corners. Now, let's talk about the sockets a little bit here. This is a depiction of what the sockets may have been like. We do know that they were made of silver. You can see in this image here, that's the sockets right there. and they would be made of silver, and then this would be your board, 15 feet long, and these would be your tenons that would slip into the sockets. There was two tenons per board and two sockets per board. Then they were overlaid with gold. Something really interesting that I wanted to bring out with the sockets was just to give you an idea of what went into making them and how, what, you know, maybe what their significance is. So there's 100 sockets in total. Imagine 100 of these silver sockets lining the bottom all the way around in the horseshoe shape of the boards that make up the tabernacle. 100 in total. Where did they get the silver for this? Well, if we read in Exodus 30, verses 12 to 16, that all the adult males of the children of Israel, which totaled 603,550 men, had to give a half a shekel. And that silver was used as atonement money. God called it atonement money. He needed for them to give an atonement. And so then the atonement money was used to make the sockets. So we see the entire structure, or the meat of the tabernacle, sat upon these silver sockets. The significance there of atonement, God atoning, making atonement for his people. So we have the whole foundation of the tabernacle is resting on those sockets. Exodus 38:27 says that it was over 100 talents of silver. This was a lot of silver. Heavy. It would have been sturdy. Each adult male gave a half a shekel. One talent was used. One talent. We talked about a talent. How many pounds did I say a talent was? Approximately 70, 75. So each socket weighed one talent of silver. Was one talent of silver. So 100 times 75 pounds. The silver of atonement. Okay, I have a couple pictures up here. Let's take a look, before I talk about those, let's take a look starting in verse 29 of Exodus 26. And thou shalt overlay the boards with gold and make their rings of gold for places for the bars. And thou shalt overlay the bars with gold. Now this is the interlocking bars that would lock everything together. And thou shalt rear up the tabernacle according to the fashion thereof, which was showed thee in the mount. So each time God is saying, you know, you need to do this according to as I have showed you, after the pattern that I have showed you. Verse 31 gets to the veil. It says, and thou shalt make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen of cunning work, with cherubim shall it be made, which we will get to next after I talk a little bit more about this structure. So the wooden structure was then fastened at the corners with corner boards. It talks about two boards on the corner. Now, some people, there's different ideas or opinions as to how the corner boards were put up and how they were fastened. But we do know the total number of boards that were used, and we know that they were fastened. It talks about rings in Exodus 26. So if you look here, you can see we have some sort of fastening system. This person was thinking that there might be two nails and a ring here. Somehow they fastened that corner to make it strong. But the point is, these corner boards, a little bit like Jesus as our chief cornerstone, was what held everything together. That was the strength that it gave to the tabernacle structure. Now, here's someone's thoughts on how the corner boards could have been fastened or made. This one here, if you have corner boards at an angle, you'd end up with 11 cubits across here, because you have six boards from here to here, and 1.5 cubits, you got a little over one. Yeah, if you do your math, Pythagorean theorem there, you end up with a little bit wider. So this would make an 11 cubit wide interior. If you did it this way, you'd end up with a 12 cubit wide interior. And this way would be very close to 10 cubits wide. Regardless of how it would have been done, one thing that I would like to note is that the Holy of Holies in Solomon's temple was a perfect cube. And if this, however this was set up, if the interior was 10 cubits wide, that means it would have been 10 cubits high and 10 cubits deep, which would have made this Holy of Holies a perfect cube. So here's an overall view. You have the crossbars coming in here, center ones. There was five for each side. You have your five pillars out front here. This is where the door would have been, and then the veil would have been here. You have five pillars for the veil. And then 20 boards, six boards, and two. Gives you 48 in total, all overlaid with gold and with solid foundation of silver. Now, the last thing that I'd like to talk about, and I'll end here, is the veil. Many of us know the veil pretty well based on Jesus' death. When he died, the veil was torn in two. Now, this veil, let's talk about the word veil. Can someone tell me, give me a definition of the word veil? Covering, okay. Separation, okay. Yeah, veil was a separation from the holiness of God and the sinfulness of man. It was only once a year that the high priest would pass through that veil to go in there and make atonement in the Holy of Holies. So we see the veil made here. The veil is made of blue, purple, scarlet, and fine twined linen. Let's take a look at it in the scripture here. Exodus 26, 31, "And thou shalt make a veil of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen of cunning work. With cherubims shall it be made. And thou shalt hang it upon four pillars." I'm sorry, I made a mistake. That's right. It's four pillars, not five. This one here is for the veil, four pillars were used. "Hang it upon four pillars of shittim wood overlaid with gold. Their hooks shall be of gold upon the four sockets of silver. And thou shalt hang up the veil under the tatches, that thou mayest bring in thither within the veil the ark of the testimony." So the ark was to go inside of the Holy of Holies. "And the veil shall divide unto you between the holy place and the most holy." So it was a separation or a division. "And thou shalt put the mercy seat upon the ark of the testimony in the most holy place. And thou shalt set the table without the veil, and the candlestick over against the table on the side of the tabernacle toward the south. And thou shalt put the table on the north side." So this is talking about some of the furniture and where it was placed. "And thou shalt make an hanging for the door of the tent of blue and purple and scarlet and fine twined linen wrought with needlework. And thou shalt make for the hanging five pillars of shittim wood and overlay them with gold, and their hooks shall be of gold, and thou shalt cast five sockets of brass for them." So notice how the veil, see if I can find that here. Notice how the veil has cherubims on it. I'm not sure if I touched on this or not, but does anybody know the significance of a cherubim used here in the tabernacle? What did cherubim do, usually, as we find them in this scripture? Guardians. Guardians of God's holiness or his glory, yeah. So here we see that cherubims are on the veil. There were four pillars used to hold up the veil. And there were golden hooks and silver sockets. So this was the division. This is what separated God and his holiness from men. So hopefully today you have a better understanding of the structure of the tabernacle, a better picture of what it would have looked like. And I would encourage you, study it out for yourself. I know I said that before, but so often I hear, well, let's just put it this way. Before I started studying the tabernacle and the Old Testament like this, I know that when I would read the Bible through, or I would get to Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, it was difficult to read through. But now it's changed. I would say now reading Exodus, reading Leviticus, reading Numbers and Deuteronomy, there's so much that you can learn about who God is and what he did with his people in the past and how that translates today. I can't stress it enough. It's just amazing. It's beautiful how God has given us his word and the Old Testament and just how rich it really is. So I would say study it. If you're interested, if this whets your appetite, study it more. A whole sermon, I'm not sure how long I've been going now, but we only got through a chapter and a half today. There's so much more. God, I don't think there's any other topic that God devotes more chapters and more scripture to than this idea of the tabernacle and how it all works. I mean, there's Exodus and then there's Leviticus, and that's a lot of pages of scripture there devoted just to that. So I think it would be important for us to learn it and to study it. So that's my encouragement, and if you have any words of correction or advice for me afterwards, I would be open to that as well. So let's close in prayer, and then I'll give the service over.